from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
In a newly released book entitled I Was Possessed, a French writer, Michel Charron, details his possession by demons 25 years ago and how the Blessed Mother had a hand in his freedom from Satan's grip. This week on Register Radio, Solène Tadier, the Register's European correspondent, recounts her conversation with Charron about his terrifying experience and the saving power of Jesus. And then, after 6 weeks of testimony and controversial legal maneuvering, a federal court in California found that pro-life advocate David DeLeiden's Center for Medical Progress caused substantial harm to abortion giant Planned Parenthood. We talked to Joan Frawley Desmond, the Register's senior editor, about the trial and what's next for David DeLeiden. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register. I'm joined by my co-host, Matthew Bunsen. Hi, Matthew.
Hello. Great to be with you.
This is a very interesting story about demonic activity. This story that Solène Tadier did for the Register made its way to Drudge Report. And this is an experience we have all the time at the Register. When you use the word Satan or devil or possession or exorcist, it explodes. This is a sad reality because people are so interested in it.
It is very much, but this is also a reflection of the fact that these demonic possessions and obsessions and real concerns about demonic activity have only increased in recent years with the rise of the interest in occults really neo-pagan practices.
That's right. But Michel Charron tells his story in this newly released book. It's written in French, and of course that was the perfect opportunity to have Solène Tadier read it and to write about it. And in this case, she was able to interview him. Solène, thanks for being on the call with us.
Sure. Hello, Jeanette.
So Solène, you were able to talk to Michel to hear his story from his own mouth. We had a discussion amongst our team of whether or not we would cover this story. Why were you confident that we could actually cover this story about someone claiming he was possessed?
Well, first of all, I trust the Church of France, because the Michel Chiron's spiritual director, Father François Jacolin, who is a highly respected religious figure in France, and he then became Bishop of Luçon in the Vendée. So I trust the clergyman. Absolutely. And the book is prefaced by Father Jean-Baptiste Golfier, who is a prominent expert on the field of exorcism. He wrote several books on the topic and does many conferences on that. And I also read the testimony of the journalist that interviewed Michel Chiron for the book. This journalist, Thomas Oswald, made an investigation about Michel Chiron before doing the book. He was initially very cautious about that. And then he quickly understood that it was all true, because the man had a blog and he had the same story for over 20 years. Mm. And he does not enjoy the public spotlight at all. So he's very genuine and authentic. And this is what struck me the most about him.
The author of the book, so the person, the journalist who wrote mm-hmm. about Michel's story, is he a believer?
Yes, he is. He's a Catholic journalist. He writes for several Catholic mm-hmm. newspapers in France. Mm-hmm. And he was attracted by his blog at the beginning, seeing these incredible testimonies. And he thought that it might be of interest for many people in France, as there is a very preoccupying increase in the practice of cult and science and things like that. I believe it happens in Europe in general, because former exorcist in Rome, Don Amort, believed that around 25% of young Italians had tried science at least once in their life, like yeah. revolving tables and all. And it is perhaps up to 66% in France, according to French priest Marc Prigent, that published a study like in 2016. So it is a very recent study, and it is a very incredible phenomenon. And I believe people underestimate the effect of such practices. So it was the purpose of this book.
Absolutely. So let's talk about that precisely. How did Michel actually come under demonic possession?
Well, he was totally lost in his life. He was feeling totally alone. the Catholic education he received in his childhood had been swept away by the Cultural Revolution of May 1968. So he became an atheist, but he had several romantic experiences. So he was feeling extremely alone, and he was seeking an answer to his sadness, his loneliness. So he was trying to get some answers. At the beginning, it was just to have fun with friends and colleagues. He was just doing that. Like, then he understood that it actually worked with great astonishment. Like, the pedestal table turned, and the spirits could communicate coherent messages through Scrabble letters, so it's very scary. But then he stopped for a while, and a decade later, he did it again, but with a darker state of mind. He was extremely sad and lonely, and he felt desperate about his romantic life. He wanted to find an answer and a solution. And this is how he started to talk alone with these entities. He didn't really know what it was, because at that time he didn't believe in the devil. And, you know, according to a French poet, Charles Baudelaire, he once nicely said that the prettiest trick of the devil is to make us believe that he doesn't exist. And it is our main problem today, that everyone would talk about Satan and the devil and all, but many people don't actually believe that he really exists and that he can do us a deep harm. So that's the problem. Mm-hmm.
And there was harm. I mean, what were the kind of things that that happened to Michel that were harming him? I mean, you detail some of those. He details, I guess, some of those in his interview with you. And I mean, some of it's kind of silly things, like making him stick out his tongue. But there were other things that were far more dangerous.
Yeah, it is totally chilling. I mean, he was hearing voices, very distinct voices, because I wanted to ask him if he could think that somehow his distress could have caused him hallucinations, or right, if he could have thought that he could have a kind of split personality or something. And he told me, no, absolutely not. My mind was clear. And afterwards, he told me that he actually went through a psychological evaluation and he was officially sane. So he heard these incredible voices speaking about incredible things, saying that he was chosen by the devil. They didn't say the devil right away. They mentioned their king. Their king chose him to give him like potentialities. So potentialities he didn't really know what it meant at the time. And such potentialities were meant to help him bring more people to the king. Mm-hmm. So now that we understand what happened to him, it is even more scary, because we understand the source of that, of these potentialities, like the ability to heal people or to guess the card someone will pick. Very, very different things, but things that are meant just to prove people the power of the devil.
Right. And for us, you know, the term, we don't use the term potentialities very often, but really what this is are powers, you know, mm-hmm. these powers that are granted. And so he even talks of the fact that he contemplated suicide because of this influence. And thanks be to God, he did not take his own life. And you make the distinction that, or maybe it was him, but you writing about the distinction. They can't kill you. These demons can't kill you, but they can drive you
exactly
to despair, extreme despair.
Mm-hmm. He said that he maintained a free will the whole time, and that's the scary thing, because in his specific case, the devil couldn't possess his body. So he has a very specific case, because in many cases of possession, the devil can possess the body and the whole, the mind, the body and everything. But Michel Chiron couldn't be entirely possessed, and this is the distinction he makes. And apparently it is something that that can totally happen, because he had a kind of protection, a protection that he found out later to be the Virgin Mary and his mother that passed away a few years before. And he had an apparition like 2 years after he was really thanked to an exorcism. But he had kind of a free will, but he was somehow pushed into committing suicide, and he could take the decision not to do it. He could understand that it was not the fruit of his own will, but he also understand that the demon wanted him to die at some point when they mm-hmm. understood that it was not useful anymore, that the project they had for him wasn't working, very mm-hmm. simply.
Well, Solène, the demons referred to the king, but they also referred to the woman. I was very interested in the role that the Blessed Mother played in his liberation.
Exactly. He told me that from the beginning, actually, because he was... I asked him if the voices were speaking about Jesus, and he told me, oh, no, the voices, yes, but he said that Jesus was part of the past, and he did exist, but it was just part of the past and all. But they could mention Jesus like that, but they mentioned the woman without naming specifically the Virgin Mary, saying that it was a scary woman, and he didn't understand at the beginning who was this woman. And he understands only after the exorcism that this woman referred to the Virgin Mary, because he was praying the Virgin Mary all day long and doing praying rosaries and doing many Hail Mary all day long. And when he was doing so, he heard the voices saying, oh, the woman, it's everything is the woman's fault. It is all the woman's fault. So, yeah, they were very frightened. She has an incredible power over them. And he felt, Michel Chiron felt that, and he felt the need to pray many Hail Mary every day. So it is a deep sign of her power over the demons.
Absolutely.
And it continued afterwards with his operation and all I mentioned even in the article.
It makes me think, Solène, of the images of Mary in crushing mm-hmm. the serpent. And of course, that's Satan, Mary crushing Satan from the head. Solène, what should we learn from a story like this? I mean, why tell this story? What do we need to learn?
Michel Chiron wants to raise awareness about the danger of practicing such seances individually or collectively. He wants to save people from having the same experience he had. And we shouldn't underestimate the impact that it can have on our lives. And I believe that the great deal of interest that such topic arouse in the Western countries in general is symptomatic. People need to hear it. But because today many Catholics don't even know that the Church speaks very little about it. So this is why I thought that it may be something very important for us, because it is not sensationalist at all, eventually. Michel Chiron is a very discreet, simple, smart man. He's full of God's love. He does not like to talk about the devil. He just wants to bear testimony for other people around the world to avoid them to fall in this terrible nightmare.
Absolutely.
And it shows the need for people to be catechized in Europe and in Western countries. People don't know catechism, and I believe it is something very relevant that we need to start over with the very basis of our of the teaching of the Catholic Church. And this is the success of this story shows that, according to me.
Right, the real power of Jesus, but also the mm-hmm. influence and reality of Satan. And so, this is why the Register covers this, because. Again, not for the sensationalism, but because it is real, and because we do need to educate people to this reality, and to know that a priest can help lead one back to Christ by invoking his name, and that at times we really do need to seek this to be free from the power of Satan. And so I encourage our listeners to read Solène's story at ncregister.com. And when we come back, we'll be joined by Joan Frawley Desmond, the Register senior editor, and we'll hear about David Dalyden and his trial. This is Register Radio. More when we return.
There's nothing like EWTN's National Catholic Register. Revealing, engaging, inspiring. The most comprehensive news of the day from a Catholic perspective, with the moral authority that comes from being faithful to the teachings of the Catholic Church. And in the words of our founder, Monsignor Matthew Smith, a paper that will always be loyal to the Church and has no selfish axe to grind. Because the truth when the Register was founded in 1927 is still the truth today. The award-winning National Catholic Register helps readers engage the culture with confidence in the saving and sanctifying gospel of Jesus Christ. Get 6 free issues today by ordering online at ncregister.com/radio or call 800-421-3230 and mention code RADIO. That's 800-421-3230 and mention code RADIO. The National Catholic Register. Read faithfully.
This is Jeff Burson, producer of Register Radio, inviting you to join us on a very special EWTN Thanksgiving. Call the EWTN listener comment line, 205-795-5773, and tell us your memories, traditions, and what you're grateful for. Then listen on Thanksgiving Day as we share your messages with a global audience. From our EWTN family to yours, God bless.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, joined by my co-host, Matthew Bunsen. In 2015, David DeLeiden and his organization, Center for Medical Progress, published undercover videos that exposed some of the horrors taking place in Planned Parenthood facilities. These videos eventually led to a criminal and civil lawsuits against David DeLeiden and his group, and this recently resulted in a very difficult verdict in a civil suit. We've got Joan Frawley-Desmond, who's been covering this topic from the very beginning. So, Joan, on the day that this verdict came down, David DeLeiden, this pro-life advocate, who's been really fighting for the work that he has done, and described this as justice is not done today in San Francisco. It really was a long trial, almost a month long, and there's a lot of things going on here all at once in the civil and the criminal levels. But let's first of all talk about the latest ruling in San Francisco last week. What happened?
I can tell you, Jeanette, people were devastated. So many people have been covering this trial, of course, starting with the defendants, which includes DeLeiden, his primary co-defendant, Sandra Merrick, who engaged in some of the investigative work with him directly, and three other co-defendants who played minor roles. All were brought in. All were had a sweeping verdict against them. They were found guilty of criminal trespass, of fraud, breach of contract, illegal taping of people without their consent, and finally, a RICO verdict added onto that, totaling the damages awarded to Planned Parenthood to $2.2 million. So people were shocked by it, though they feared the worst. I should also say there had been questions raised before about whether they could get a fair hearing. Of course, San Francisco itself is a liberal bastion. There were struggles with the jury pool, trying to at least find people who, while acknowledging their general support for Planned Parenthood and for legal abortion, saying whether they could actually give a fair hearing to the defendants. You had that issue. And then issues related to the judge himself and whether he should have recused himself because of what some saw as an apparent conflict of interest. Those issues were raised at the very beginning, set aside. The court trial went forward, 6-week trial with actually 9 men and 1 woman.
On the jury?
Yes, on the jury itself. You know, where are we now? We have them regrouping. They're still, the lawyers for the 5 defendants are still filing some post-trial motions, still raising some of the questions I mentioned before, to see if there could be mitigation and damages. And then at the same time, and they are absolutely pressed to the limit, they are now preparing for the criminal trial, which could start very soon. They're going to know on December 6th, because I guess they did file motions suggesting that there wasn't sufficient evidence. Keep in mind that a criminal trial has a much higher standard than for conviction. You know, whether that can be made is a question. Most of the criminal trial hinges on the alleged illegal recording of people in this investigative probe. And so that's that will be decided by a superior court judge, separate case. And then at the same time, they've got to gear up to file for appeal with the Ninth Circuit.
Right. So, you know, as we were saying, there's so much going on because of the, you know, the civil and the criminal. So the civil is the suit. Is the suit that just ended basically with this terrible verdict? There's something we've been talking about as a team, as an editorial team, Joan, since the very beginning of this, and that is the kind of a defense team that Dalyden can afford, if you will. And I mean, he had a good team. St. Thomas More Society, if I'm not wrong. It's a good team, but I mean, compared to the kind of lawyers that Planned Parenthood can suit up with, there's just some question in terms of even the equality there.
Yeah, I didn't get into this in detail, but people have talked about this issue, Jeanette. Basically, the thing is that because abortion is such an incendiary issue, it is very difficult to get white shoe law firms to take on a pro bono defense for pro-life defendants. And so that was a problem. They couldn't do that. So they still had some excellent lawyers from the Thomas More Society, Katie Short, the legal director, or Catherine Short, the legal director for the Life Legal Defense Foundation, lots of experience as well. But of course they could have benefited from, you know, a top advocate who, you know, might normally charge an arm and a leg for such a defense, but would come in, you know, these people come in later on into the case and are the direct advocate for the case at trial. And so these other lawyers would still be doing a lot of the work and still be preparing for that, but they would benefit from this sort of, you know, major legal firepower. That has been an issue as well. Arnold and Porter, on the other hand, has provided pro bono help for Planned Parenthood, which, of course, already has much more significant resources at their disposal than a small nonprofit. I did attend one day of the hearing, Jeanette, and at one point the lawyer for Planned Parenthood noted to the jury that Dalyden had raised about $400,000 after the videos first came out. And the judge said to him, well, you know, why is that relevant? And he said, well, you know, it's a female lawyer. She said, well, just because, you know, I want to show, you know, that, you know, he was making money from this, i.e., you know, this was not just some, you know, idealistic cause. And the judge just looked at her. and ruled that inadmissible. But so yeah, there were some ridiculous attempts to smear the defendants in the court. But the bigger issue, can we get to some of the bigger issues, which was what was ruled inadmissible by the judge generally? Well, basically, the entire context for Dalyden's investigation was ruled inadmissible, practically. The jury was not able to see hardly any of the videos. They barely understood what was going on. They didn't understand the context of the concerns about fetal organ trafficking. So how do you even approach a case when you barely understand why someone's doing what they're doing, why they have done what they've done? And basically, of course, it made them more likely to respond to the allegation made by Planned Parenthood's lawyers, which was that this was malicious intent to damage the organization, as opposed to a justified effort to investigate issues that had not been fully investigated before.
Exactly. So they kind of took it out of an activist or activist journalist role of investigating and looking into criminal offenses, and they really honed in on the fact that he was trying to do damage and violence to the organization. And I remember that they kind of overemphasized violence that happened after this, saying that it was a direct result. And so, you know, saying Planned Parenthood saying they have to build up their security and all of that. So instead of being able to present the case as a journalist and a First Amendment right to do this kind of citizen journalist, they basically got cut at the knees. They couldn't do that. And in fact, Joan, they have appealed, they had appealed to the Supreme Court regarding how the cases were going, and the court declined to hear it, correct?
Right. That is correct as well. So that, you know, that often does happen. The court did not take that up. And so, you know, we'll have to see what happens at this point. I think a key thing, Jeanette, moving forward with the civil case as it moves to the Ninth Circuit, is what will happen at the Ninth Circuit, because in the past, that has been a progressive bastion. And in fact, more of the decisions made at the Ninth Circuit have been reversed than of any other circuit, because of what people see as its political makeup, a more activist bench. However, three or four nominees have been confirmed to the Ninth Circuit, and now they are starting to get different opinions, less predictable opinions. So basically, I spoke with the defense lawyers and also with Teresa Collette, who is a top pro-life legal expert, and they have said, you know, it's just going to depend on who they get. They could get a really strong panel that would really rule on the merits of the case, or they could get a panel that will see things very much as Planned Parenthood might. So that remains to be seen. And then, of course, the criminal case, don't forget, we have 15 felony counts, and whether the Superior Court judge will decide whether all of these will go forward is still in question. That's being decided now.
Well, we've been unable to get David DeLeiden, an interview with David DeLeiden. I'm sure he's being asked by many, many people, but so far we haven't been able to do that. We've gotten these statements, and we'll continue to follow this case. And of course, just pray for this group and what they must be going through with these verdicts. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio here on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and my producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.